Let me bring in my friend Brian Murphy, WRAL Sports Investigative Reporter. Excuse me, for those people who are looking, like, why does Gold have two peaches on the desk in front of him? I love a good peach. I love a good peach, Brian.
I want to talk this golf thing, man. Holy cow.
I'll be more than happy to talk about it. I've already done a Zoom conversation with news. I told them you could just punch up the show because we're going to be talking about this for the first few minutes. All right, we'll get back to Liv, but let me ask you this question, because I know that we are poised to have a vote in the state legislature in the House on the sports wagering bill. So give me the latest. Where are we?
Yeah, 2 o'clock, the House is going to vote. We all think they're going to vote to concur with the Senate changes to House Bill 347, the sports wagering bill. They'll have to vote again tomorrow. Again, another quirk, because this is a revenue bill and it increases taxes or has a tax component to it. And then it'll go to the governor. And the governor this morning once again reiterated that he is supportive, generally supportive of sports gambling. And so no reason to think he won't sign the bill.
All right, so we have to vote twice? Why do we explain why we have to vote twice on this?
They had to vote twice in the Senate as well. And bills that have a revenue component that raise revenue require two votes.
Did the vote change in the Senate? Was there a different, or was it the same yays and nays?
The numbers were off by one. I think one senator was missing the second.
Oh, okay. So. Like, I don't have to vote this time. I just voted. All right. So,
I think that's to avoid them sneaking, like, tax increases or tax cuts in while, you know, somebody's off at some event or something.
All right. Totally understand. Brian Murphy, WRAL Sports Investigative Reporter. You said the House agreed to the changes. Just refresh our memory. Were the changes significant that left this in doubt?
I don't know if it left it in doubt, but there were significant changes. They upped the tax rate from 14% to 18%. They added in-person betting at sports books around the state, including possibly PNC Arena. They added horse racing to the bill.
Right.
So there were some pretty significant changes made. They added a couple more schools, including East Carolina, Appalachian State, to the schools that get money, the athletic departments that get money from the revenue. So significant changes to the bill, but I think they were working with the House all along. So there are no surprises. I think the House cleared the vote by about 19 earlier this session, and I imagine we'll have a similar vote today.
So the tax rate going from 14 to 18%, and that is on the operators. That's not on the people who win, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that's
all. We're all going to win all of our bets, Brian.
You will have to pay taxes on your winnings. I think it's if you win $600 or more, right, you will have to file some taxes on that. But no, the 18% is on the operator's gross gaming revenue. So that's money taken in minus winnings paid out. And importantly, in the Senate bill, they did away with deductions for promotions and credits. So we may see less lucrative credits in North Carolina or promotions, you know, bet $5, win 150 that you see on TV all the time.
Right.
We may have less of that in the state because they did away with, they can no longer write those off on their taxes.
My guess, and we're talking with Brian Murphy, WRAL Sports Investigative Reporter, is that the operators understand the long game here. We'll still see those. Maybe they just last for a shorter period of time. But when we do finally get mobile and in-person wagering in the state, I think we'll see those at least for a period of time. We're still targeting early January for a start?
Yeah, so the bill that's another change in the bill. It can start no sooner than January 8th, 2024. But they have given the Lottery Commission up to a year from when the bill becomes law to get sports gambling live in the state. So we could be looking at like mid-June or early June of 2024. I don't think it'll take that long, but there is some wiggle room built into the bill to give the Lottery Commission time to get all the regulations in place, to sort through all these applications they're going to get, to award the licenses, et cetera, et cetera.
Why?
You know, a lot of states, you know, Vermont just passed this year, and they don't start until January. So I think, you know, right, a 6 to 9 month lag time is pretty reasonable, at least based on what other states have done. I know Maryland took almost 2 years to get it up and running. You would think Yeah, I know they don't want to give anybody a head start in the market. Uh-huh. The other thing is, this added to the application that if you partner with a entity, so if you partner with PNC Arena, you partner with the Hurricanes, that has to be marked on your application. I do wonder if it's going to take time to get those partnerships put together before they can submit their applications. I don't know. I think we're all guessing at this point. I know lawmakers want to get it up and running as soon as possible. But so I just wouldn't write that January 8th date in pen at the moment.
All right. So, we were hoping to get it in place before the college football national championship. But June also takes us all the way basically through this, a year from with the time the governor signs it, right? Would be the window. So let's just assume that the governor signs it, let's say Friday. Is it possible he signs it Friday?
Yeah, that's right. almost likely. Yeah.
All right, so we're talking about the 9th. So next June 9th, at least it would be before next year's Stanley Cup Finals when the Hurricanes are hosting the Arizona Coyotes. Actually, they won't be in Arizona. They'll be the Montana Coyotes. I have no idea. Is that
the
fair?
Houston Coyotes, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Or the Austin Coyotes, more likely. All right, do you want to weigh in on Liv? I've been railing about this. I don't know. There's so little information about this tour. Do you have any broad thoughts on what this means?
Sure. First, I was shocked when I saw the news. I thought it was like fake. I thought the Twitter account I saw it on was fake, and I had to go look it up. I do wonder if. And obviously, I heard your comments that you think the PGA Tour really, really got beaten badly on this one.
Horrible.
But I do wonder if Liv realized they were never going to get TV ratings for this and they were never going to sell those teams, you know, the four aces and all those things. And that the PGA Tour realized they were never going to be able to compete with the endless pit of money that the Saudis have. And so they waited them out and got a better deal. That's the only way I can make this make any sense from the PGA Tour side, is that the deal just became too good to pass up what the Saudis were offering.
Well, yeah, the Saudis are offering a lot of money. There's no question about that.
And are they offering more now than they were a year ago or 2 years ago?
I mean, honestly, I don't know. I don't know that they were offering anything. I thought, in my opinion,
Each week, we dive into the mind of the con artist, uncovering the secrets behind the biggest Ponzi schemes you never heard about.
We're not talking about Bernie Madoff or Charles Ponzi.
That's right. Those guys have been covered to death. The Ponzi Playbook will focus on those fraudsters who have swindled millions from unsuspecting investors. Subscribe to the Ponzi Playbook wherever you get your podcasts.
What Greg Norman was trying to do was basically trying to take the best players he thought. Norman absolutely thought, however many months ago, 18 months ago, February of last year, I believe he thought he could get essentially the best 40 players in the world to go play Liv for, ridiculous numbers of cartoon money, because the public investment fund of the Saudi royal family at that point was worth $620 trillion. It's a fake number.
Right,
so
right.
It was worth so much money that he just thought, well, I can just get all these guys and can do what he always wanted to do, which is finally grind the axe and destroy the PGA Tour. And it's been Norman's goal ever since he was humiliated. Now, this is almost 30 years ago.
I'm going to take like the Rorys of the world at their word that this was, about legacy and the tour and human rights to some degree, but basically the leadership of Liv and the PGA Tour have been lying all along.
Because
Liv's not out to destroy the tour, and the PGA Tour, doesn't care about all the things they said they care about, because now they just took all the money.
There's no question that the PGA Tour is two-faced here. I'm not even arguing that, but and this is where I'm gonna try to catch up with somebody who would know the legal ramifications of this better than I, but 5 days ago on June 1st, in the USA Today, there's a story, Endeavor, which it has its hands in wrestling and UFC and I believe IMG as well. They were basically working on a deal to put $1 billion of investment into Liv Golf, essentially allowing the Saudis to back away some from, because that was obviously hanging over everybody, was the Saudi angle to this. And the PGA Tour discouraged them from doing so. Now, if I'm being sued if I have an antitrust lawsuit filed against me and I am discouraging a client from investing in a competitor, I just don't know how you survive that. So I think, because we have no idea what the structure is, I think this is about legal avoidance and nothing else. That's why the players had no clue today,
right,
until it happened.
I can't imagine the PGA Tour or the Saudis wanted to go through discovery on this.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, the Saudis weren't doing it. They weren't opening right. their books. And the PGA Tour would have had to, but as long as it can't be proven that you are, like, what were they going to get the PGA Tour? Maybe some tax avoidance or some tax shenanigans. But as long as you weren't discouraging and conspiring against a competitor from being a competitor, you were probably okay in terms of antitrust. And now, I guess not.
I also want to know when Rory got wind of this, or when Tiger got wind of this, because they have started to change their tune a little bit. They've not been as vocal about it. And I wonder if the rank and file got a heads up 1 minute before, but I wonder if the top echelon got word, because Rom earlier this week was talking about how Sergio Garcia should play in the Ryder Cup.
I believe, just because you mentioned the Ryder Cup, I believe that most people thought about that all along. I mean, John Rahm, he wants the European side wants to win. Whether Garcia is good enough to be a valuable part of the European tour, a European team or not, remains to be seen. But I think Rahm wants to win. So, yeah, Garcia or Ian Poulter can be part of that team going forward, because, you know, they were legendary parts, you know, pieces to their puzzle. Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson should both be on the U.S. team. We shouldn't even be having a debate about that, because it should be about the two, you know, one continent and one nation. But I don't believe, I'll be surprised if Rory knew about this. I'll be really surprised. I think he's been tired, frustrated by his play, and tired of talking about it.
Yeah.
That's my read on it, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, Brian. I don't want to tell anybody this, but I have been wrong before.
It's fascinating. I can't wait to see sort of what comes out, what it looks like. I'm just not sure anyone has an idea what it's going to look like.
You would think that there would be some structure. Nothing. We have no idea what it is. I have no idea how many. Is it one event? Is it just going to be one event? I have no idea.